the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Representative Poston, have you read the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I've read the minutes, and I'd like to move them.
All right, Representative Poston moves the minutes dated March 8th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I'll go ahead and move Representative Fabian's bill, House File 3890, to get it before the committee to be held over for possible inclusion. Representative Fabian, welcome to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. 3890 is a real simple bill. As you know, we appropriate dollars for elk and wolf depredation. In this case here, we're talking specifically about the wolf depredation. On page 2 of the bill, where it starts there, on 2.17, you can see that each year we appropriate $175,000 of the biennium for crippled and destroyed livestock. What we're doing here, Department of Ag has come to us and asked that the commissioner can use these dollars that are in this $175K per year to reimburse the University of Minnesota extension agents who go out and help with some of the work in terms of assessing values and whatnot on the destroyed and crippled livestock. So it's real simple, Mr. Chair. We're not asking for any new appropriation. We're just asking for the authority to use up to $5,000 each year of the biennium to cover these costs.
And Ripson Fabian, did we do something similar to this to the elk language in years past that allowed the same type of dollars to be spent similar ways?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and thank you. What we did there is, in order to be able to assess the damage, you have to have some sort of an adjuster go out and do that. And what we did is we allowed the Department of Ag to go out and find some different adjusters. Myself, being a crop hail adjuster, I feel pretty confident that I could have gone out and did an adjustment on a soybean field or something like that to determine the damage. In some cases, the extension was doing this at some different counties, but then some of those services were diminished for various reasons, and we needed adjusters, so we went out and gave the department the authority to go out and use other adjusters to do these things.
All right, thank you. Members, any questions for Representative Fabian, Chair Fabian? No? Hearing none, is there anybody else that would like... Pardon me? Oh, sorry. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, I'm just wondering, we have a real problem, as you know, with depredation, and we're going to take another $5,000 out of this. Is there any plans in the future to maybe increase the amount of the total $17.8 million to move to the depredation fund?
Chair Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, we did do that. The number went up in 2000 in the budget that was passed. Last spring, that number went to $600,000, I believe, for the two parts of this, for elk and wolf depredation, but we do separate them out in the bill, but we also then allow for an exchange in those funds to be able to cover that. And one of the reasons why the number was so much bigger is because there were a number of people who had made claims on wolf depredation in particular, who were not able to get reimbursed for that because the fund had run out of money. So we had to, and thank you to Mark Knight, we had to go back and figure out in the Department of Ag to figure out who had not been paid for their claim. We had to pick those up from the previous biennium, pay those claims, and then we established a number that we thought would get us through to the end of the biennium, which will be the end of June of 19. I'm hopeful that we do, but I also know that Chair Hamilton and others feel strong enough about this that if there are some unfortunate situations where people are not able to be reimbursed because the fund has run out, again, I hope that we can go back and pick them up.
Representative.
And we're not buying any land with this bill either.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for members? Otherwise, anybody else would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one. So I will renew my motion that House File 3890 be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Chair Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
All right. Next on the agenda, let's see, we have 2938. Representative Backer. So I'll go ahead and move House File 2938 to get it before the committee. Representative Backer, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair and members. House File 2938 is a bill that would extend by 10 years the Minnesota Agriculture, Fertilizer, Research, and Education Council and the fertilizer inspection fee. We have the surcharge of 40 cents per ton that funds the research would stay in place. Along also it funds education and technology grants awarded by AFREC each year. Without this extension, the surcharge would expire 2019, and then AFREC would expire 2020. In ag policy, we had a testifier from the Hoffman area district I represent, and basically what we're hearing is from the stakeholders who are people on the ground is this is allowing them to be better stewards using nitrates more effectively and fertilizer and so forth. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Bond for his testifying.
All right, thank you. Mr. Bond, welcome to the committee. State your name and who you represent for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair Hamilton, members of the committee. My name is Bill Bond. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. We represent the crop input industry and crop consultants across the state. I'm also coming on behalf of the AFRAC, we call it AFRAC, Board Chairman Paul Grunberg, who could not be here today, but you have in your folders his PowerPoint. I'll just briefly touch on it for those of you that may not be familiar with the organization. It was established in January of 2008, and it was really examined by very carefully by everyone, including the department. There was a recognized need for additional fertility research in the state, and we also recognized the need to coordinate some of the funds that some of the grower groups had, the promotional funds, to do good fertilizer research. We realized the issues regarding nitrates in the water, but more than that, the efficiency and effectiveness of fertilizer was at stake. So we brought together this 12-member council. Each of the promotional groups appoints their own representative. They're a very conservative group. They insisted that the fund not pay a per diem or pay their mileage. That's paid by the organizations that appoint the groups. In 2008, you made a very significant change to the organization. Or, I'm sorry, 2014-15, that was very important, removing the $800,000 cap on the fund. It raises about $1.2 million. And you also capped what the MDA labor cost could be at $80,000. And that allowed us then to establish our own AFRAC fund within the Department of Ag who administers this, according to the state rules and regs. And at the same time, you set the sunset at 2020. That's coming up pretty quick. This bill simply extends it to 2030 and extends the 40-cent fertilizer fee that pays for this to 2030 as well. So it has the support of all the organizations, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from members? Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The hot topic these days is nitrogen research and fertilizer. Can you talk a minute about what you're doing into research of keeping the nitrogen on the fields?
Well, and you have in your PowerPoint some good description on some of the most recent research. We have raised over $7.4 million for soil fertility research, efficiency and effectiveness, and because when plants use the fertilizer efficiently, then it doesn't go in the water. And we've had over the RFPs for over $25 million, so there's a very select process, a very precise process for awarding that money. And we have seen significant value, and we've seen impacts on edge-of-field research as well. We know that we're getting more efficient, and we think less water is being impacted by the nitrates from our research.
Chair Anderson. Yeah, excuse me. Any other questions from members? Hearing none. Thank you, Mr. Bond.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing nobody moving up front, Representative Backer, would you like any final comments?
Would appreciate your support. Thank you, members.
All right, thank you. So House File 2938 will be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Backer.
Thank you.
All right, next on the agenda. We have next on the agenda. Let's see, Representative Backer, you're up again.
Yeah. Representative, my twin brother, okay?
Right? Yeah. Representative Poston will move House File 3442, correct?
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 3442 be re-referred to the General Register.
All right, we have the motion and the bill before us. Representative Backer, to your bill.
I understand that we have two amendments.
Okay.
A1 and A2, is that...
All right. You like to take up first?
Oh, we could do A2. Basically, there was both amendments. I'm going to speak on both of them, A2 and A1. Just gets it in the form. There was some...
Do you have the A2? Excuse me, Representative Backer.
Okay, no problem.
I need... do you have the A2 amendment?
It was posted on the website.
How about... we're waiting for that one to be distributed. Are you okay with talking to the A1 amendment?
We're okay. Yeah, we're okay. Yep. We're okay.
Representative Poston, we'll move the A1 amendment to the A1 amendment. We have it before us.
Yeah, the A1 amendment, basically, if we look at line 1.8, we're adding oil or animal fat. And then if we go down to 1.22, we're just putting the bill into what it was really intended was to make it more feasible for smaller businesses to work with this program. So we're lowering the production pounds from 750,000 to 250,000 pounds of chemical. And then if you go on the back, you will see that at 2.2 also. That's what we're doing.
Okay. Members, any questions to the A1 amendment? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and vote on the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Where's the A2? So for the A2 amendments, you're wanting to, Representative Backer, I think we can do an oral amendment, if that's okay, because you're wanting to take the language that reduced the number of pounds, correct, and put that back the way that it originally stated?
Yes, if you look at on the House File number 3442, line 1.12, we're taking the 23,750 and making it to 1,500.
No, we're restoring.
Oh, we're restoring. Excuse me. We're getting rid of the 1,500, thank you, and restoring it to 23,750 so it matches up with what the bill was intended for. Okay. So if we, again, just to clarify it, line 1.12, we're removing 1,500 and restoring it to the 23,750. That's what Amendment 2 does, Chair and members.
Back to the original language. And also lines 1.17. Mr. Sullivan, you want to just repeat that?
Chair, but 1.17 would still do the same because it gives it a range. And that, what's this?
Okay.
Yeah, I know. At 1.17, it should stay at 1,500 because we keep it as the range. So only one on A2 would be on line 1.12. That's all A2 does, Chair and members.
All right, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment to House File 3442 is page 1, line 12. Restore the stricken language and delete 1,500.
Okay. Everybody clear on the oral amendment? All right. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Backer.
Thank you, members. Thank you for your patience there. The bioincentive program, what it really does is this was passed in 2015 with strong bipartisan support, and that's what House File 3442 relates to. The bioincentive program supports the development of new technology for producing advanced biofuels, bio-based chemicals, and biomass thermal energy. The program enjoys strong statewide support because of its potential of creating new value-added industries that benefit agriculture, forestry, and even projects in the metro area using organic waste. It was hard to anticipate every possible type of new technology when this bill was initially written, so that's why we're adding the update today with House File 3442 that would make other technology eligible. And so this bill enjoys support from a broad range of stakeholders in the bioeconomy coalition of Minnesota, including agriculture, forestry, the environmental community, and a variety of bio-based industries. And I have a testifier, chair and members.
All right, thank you. Mr. Jordan, state your name for the record. Who you represent? Begin, please.
Mr. Chair, members, Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute, representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. The Bioeconomy Coalition is a statewide partnership including agriculture, forestry, a whole variety of both small and established industries, and the environmental community. The coalition is really mission. Our mission is to grow these industries in the state. And Mr. Chair, appreciated the opportunity to work with you on this. This bill in the past, and your leadership on this topic. Essentially, you don't have a crystal ball. You don't know every in and out when you help shape a policy from the beginning. And we've learned some new things in the 3 years since this bill originally passed. And these changes are just intended to make sure that some good projects we're aware of that are consistent with the original intent are eligible for the program.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Gordon. I really appreciate the work of the Bioeconomy Coalition. I think you're really working to move Minnesota forward in exciting ways that have multiple benefits. If you would just kind of give us a summary of some of the activities you've been engaged in. I know you're busy, but just kind of give us an overview of some of the activities you're engaged in over the last couple of years since we last looked at this legislation.
Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, thank you for that question. And it has been a busy few years. And, you know, there's a number of projects emerging since this program was passed. I think in talking with the department, we work very closely with the Department of Agriculture, and we're aware of a whole number of projects that are essentially getting in the queue and getting ready to use the program. So one of the exciting things that's happening is something called corn kernel cellulosic ethanol. So people have heard of, we're going to haul a bunch of bales of stover in, corn stover, and we're going to make ethanol out of it. It turns out there's biomass in the actual corn kernel itself. So there's an opportunity to make advanced biofuels in the same ethanol facility where you make corn ethanol, adding additional, 10% capacity, has a lower carbon footprint. It's very exciting. In the metro area, we're seeing a lot of interest in rethinking organic waste, essentially garbage. So instead of thinking of it as a waste that we have to dispose of, it's now a raw material for making higher value advanced biofuels, bio-based chemicals, and other. So there's a lot of really interesting opportunities in the metro as well. In the forest products sector, there's a lot of interest. Actually, the mayor of Duluth, I think, just announced yesterday their intention to use a new renewable fuel oil made from wood in the city's steam system. So this is a new opportunity as the forest products industry transitions and looks for new opportunities. That's one exciting opportunity. We're also seeing a lot of interest from the aviation biofuels industry in some, and I'm probably talking for too long, Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, but I'll just close with this point that there's some innovative new winter hardy oil seeds being developed by the University of Minnesota. There's a lot of interest from the aviation industry in aviation biofuels, and I think with some additional research, we could get those crops to a point where you have yet another value-added opportunity for agriculture.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I think this is an exciting area, arena, that we're involved in. So often we're at the legislature, we're kind of looking at patching up problems that are here or have been with us for a while. This is looking to the future and really kind of directs us in some new exciting ways that provide opportunities for agriculture that we haven't even imagined yet. And I think it's really appropriate for the legislature to be forward-thinking like this. And my thanks to the Bioeconomy Coalition for leading us in that direction and consistently coming to us with quality approaches and a responsible approach to that forward-thinking way to develop agriculture in the future.
Thank you for your comments. Chair Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. For the testifier, to qualify for this program, it says that the emissions have to be 50% less than baseline life cycle greenhouse gas emissions. Could you take a second and explain what baseline life cycle greenhouse gas emissions are, what standard that is, or what would qualify for that, and maybe what wouldn't?
Mr. Jordan.
Chair Hamilton, Chair Anderson, thank you for that question. Essentially what we have done with this program is to define an advanced biofuel using the same definition that the U.S. EPA uses for the renewable fuel standard, and that's just because industry wants to have one set of standards. So the federal renewable fuel standard defines an advanced biofuel as offering a 50% greenhouse gas reduction relative to average gasoline. And it's a full life cycle assessment, wells to wheels life cycle assessment using a bunch of analytical techniques, not all of which I even understand myself, but yeah.
Chair Anderson, all right, thank you. Any other questions from members? No? No? Representative Poston? No? You have a question? No. All right. Is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none. Representative Poston, you want to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3442 be re-referred to the General Register.
Representative Poston renews his motion that House File 3442, as amended, will be re-referred to the General Register. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Backer.
Thank you, Chairs and members.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda, Representative Backer, you're not up again, are you?
I am not.
All right.
Not even someone that looks like me.
All right. Excellent. Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that I made a mess of the table, I did bring treats because this is my first bill before the committee.
Wonderful. Welcome. All those in favor of the bill? No, I'm just back. Representative Munson, would you like to move your House File 3374? Move your bill?
Yes.
All right.
If you move it to the General Registry.
All right. Representative Munson moves House File 3374 be re-referred to the General Register. To your bill. We have the bill before us.
Yep. This is a House File 3374. It should be a non-controversial bill, but it lowers the annual fee for state contractors who work in our wayside rest areas from $50 to $10. Most of these contractors are retired farmers and people that help us in the state to take care of janitorial services at our rest stops, but they also from time to time use a pesticide to remove weeds from the sidewalk or a hornet's nest from the structures. I have today with me a Don Knudsen from Greenview to testify on the bill, and I look forward to your support.
All right, thank you. Mr. Knudsen, please say your name, state your name for the record, who you represent, and begin, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Knudsen. I serve as the executive director of Greenview Incorporated. Greenview is a nonprofit organization based in St. Paul, and our mission for the last 50 years, or almost 50 years, is to identify employment opportunities for older, lower-income people. We have some 650 to 700 people a year participating in our nonprofit organization. We do light maintenance. We do other types of custodial work at about 200 sites in Minnesota. We staff all of the highway rest areas, provide custodial work there. We work in a number of other structures in the DNR, highway waste scales, some of the MnDOT regional headquarter facilities in the state. But the majority of what we do on a daily basis is done in rest areas. So I'm here today to support House File 3374 because it does provide a nonprofit organization like Greenview with a better opportunity to meet the needs and the expectations of about 20 million people a year that use our highway rest area system in Minnesota. In particular, for select workers in our program, this fee reduction proposal would put us in a better position to meet some of those janitorial needs that Mr. Munson identified, such as we have problems with sidewalk weeds, we have problems with bee infestations occasionally, insect problems, and the traveling public has an expectation that we're going to meet those requirements and handle those situations as they occur. So the end result of this proposal, I think, would ultimately lead to more attractive rest areas, safer rest areas for the public, and that's the reason I'm here today to support House File 3374.
Thank you so much for all that you do and also for your testimony. Any questions from members? Chair Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. This is a good bill. Yes. I do have to ask, though, besides lowering the fee, do these folks have to take that pesticide applicator test?
This particular bill, we would be looking at very few people in our program would have to take some kind of a training program. I don't think that's been clearly identified for us yet. But for the most part, we're going to consider ourselves to be a non-commercial applicator using a non-restricted product, so there wouldn't be really any requirements. We would be using household-grade products.
Chair Anderson. Okay. Representative Clark.
Thank you. That was my same question, if there's any sort of training opportunity for the folks who are going to be applying these. Because it seems like a good bill. Generally, these are going to be hopefully not too dangerous a chemical, but, you know, when used wrongly, it could be a problem. Exactly. So is there any sort of expectation of some training or reading the directions at least? And I mean, what is your organization doing to help deal with that?
Mr. Knutson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, yes, we would certainly have a training program. We would work closely, I think, in conjunction with the Department of Ag to identify exactly what that should be. Obviously, it is going to be a household-grade product, and if you want to make it work properly, you have to apply it under the right conditions, mm-hmm. proper temperatures, proper wind conditions, read the label. So we certainly would be interested in that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having had to use some such products to get rid of hornets myself, I know that it is really important to do it right, or you can really backfire and not do what you're trying to do.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Any other questions from members? Seeing none. Is there anybody else that would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none as well. Any final comments, Representative Munson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd like to also point out the fiscal note included in your packet. This is in thousands of dollars, this many, so flat. But I look forward to your support, and I renew my motion to refer this bill to the General Register.
All right. Thank you. Representative Munson renews his motion that House File 3374 be re-referred to the General Register. Any discussion? None. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Munson. Let's see, Representative Anderson.
This is for Phil.
All right, Chair Anderson, next bill is House File 2884. Chair Anderson, you move your bill. Now, we're going to be holding this one over for possible inclusion. Chair Anderson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, or the idea for the bill, was brought to me by a local package store in my district, the off-sale liquor store. And in their situation, they sell ice to customers, and they make their own ice. And the Department of Ag has come out and checked the water, tested the water, and that's all fine. And it used to be that they paid a small license fee for the privilege of selling ice. But due to some changes or whatever, maybe some federal definition changes, when they renewed their license for 2016, or 2017, I should say, the entire value of all of their sales for the year were included in coming up with the value of their license. So they had to include all the sales of their beer and liquor when they came up with the value to get a license to sell ice. It didn't make a lot of sense. And to give you an example, in 2016, their license to sell ice, their own ice, was $77. And in 2017 to 2018, that license fee had increased to $799. That's an increase of about 93%. And it just didn't seem that it made sense that they should be, that their license should be valued on the packaged liquor that they sell, when in fact all they did was use their own tested water to make ice. Now, I don't think this would apply to a lot of places in the state. Your bigger C stores, I assume, have packaged ice where they get the big bags in from a commercial ice maker. This would apply only to those smaller places that use their own water to make their own ice to sell to their customers. And I believe the department is not opposing the bill. At least they haven't so far. This is the third stop on this bill's story flight. So that is my bill, Mr. Chair.
Any questions from members? Seems pretty straightforward, I think. Any questions? Representative Clark.
Chair, I do have a question. I understand what you're talking about, the cost and so on. It sounds like you're trying to correct something. But I just wasn't aware that the only thing that an ice manufacturer, no matter the big or small, was being the safety of their product was only being based on the water test. I mean, there's a whole process of, you know, using equipment that's either cleaned or not cleaned, disinfected or not disinfected. I happened to have, when I was doing my nursing degree, I did an epidemiological study on ice production disease that was transmitted through poor use of ice at a stand. So I'm just wondering, I don't know if this is for your bill or not, but is this true that the only thing that's required for making ice, no matter how big or small you are, is the quality of the water, not the quality of the cleanliness of the process? Do you understand my question?
Chair Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Clark. That goes beyond the scope of this bill.
Yeah, I think
whatever
it does.
Whatever testing is being done, regardless of whatever fee they're paying. I assume at least the issue here was not the department testing the water. It was the price they had to pay for their license.
Mm-hmm.
The testing protocol, as far as I know, is no different when they had to pay $77 as now when they have to pay $800.
Mr. Chairman, I realize that may be true, and so I agree with you, but it looks like we might have an answer here from Fred Lang, and I don't want to slow up your bill, but I do want to just know the answer to that question, which your bill raises in my mind. So.
Yeah. Ms. Place, please state your name for the record and begin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, this is actually a food license, so ice is considered food under the food code. And so this would actually be, it's not just testing the water quality, it would be testing all the things you're talking about, all the equipment and the process.
Thank you. It's very helpful. And reassuring. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Place. Any other questions for the testifier or for the author? Anybody else like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none. Any final words? There was a small fiscal note, and that's why we're going to be holding this one over for possible inclusion, okay? Any final words, Chair Anderson?
No, thank you, committee members, for hearing the bill.
All right. House File 2884 is held over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Representative Clark Johnson. No, we're playing bingo here, Representative Clark. Sorry about that, Johnson. That should be a free space, actually. We have to have a little fun, right? That was on here, too. Representative Johnson, would you like to move House File 3884?
Yes, I move House File 3484.
Excuse me, 3484. We have the bill before us.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is another forward-thinking proposal for agriculture as it seeks to provide some funding to eventually utilize agriculture and associated agribusiness to revitalize the rural economy. To explain what's behind this bill, I'd like to introduce Sam Ziegler, who's the director of Green Seam and a farmer in Blue Earth County and a yet another strong young voice in agriculture.
All right, Mr. Ziegler, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Sam Ziegler. I'm the director of Green Seam. I want to thank you for the invitation to appear before you today and thank Representative Johnson for authoring the bill. Before I describe the legislation, I want to briefly tell you what Green Seam is for those of you that are not familiar. So Green Seam is a nonprofit organization founded in 2014 that's dedicated to utilizing ag to fuel our economic growth in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa and develop and position this region to be known nationally and internationally as the place for talent, business, innovation, and education in relationship to agriculture. Like other premier industry clusters in the United States, such as Silicon Valley, Wall Street, or the Research Triangle, if you're a place or a person or business that finds value in being connected to the ag business industry, then the Green Seam is not only where you ought to be, but where you need to be, and we are working to make this destination top of mind. So this legislation before you today is born from these efforts. It was developed with and is supported by the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, the Greater Minnesota Partnership, and the Center for Rural Policy. As you well know, agriculture is the bedrock of our rural communities, not just farming, but all of the businesses that support it. More than 800 businesses associated with agriculture, everything from transportation, distribution, professional services, ag-related manufacturing, processing, and research and education, employ nearly 100,000 people, which is 28% of our workforce directly. Agribusiness represents $36 billion in economic activity, which is nearly half of all economic activity in the region, and $10 billion of value-added impacts, so new dollars coming to our region every year. However, agriculture and agribusiness face compounding challenges like aging workforce, shrinking rural communities, depressed commodity prices, and outdated infrastructure. Agribusiness can be the catalyst to revitalize rural Minnesota, but there are challenges we must overcome to make that happen. Before a business can locate or expand in rural Minnesota, it must be sure that adequate infrastructure exists to make that happen, to support their operations. To accommodate the businesses, this often means that a community must construct or expand everything from school buildings, teaching staff, roads, transit, drinking and wastewater systems, worker training, childcare, broadband, workforce housing, just to list some of them. Many communities simply do not have the resources necessary to supply this infrastructure, and thus they are unable to attract or retain these businesses. So this legislation is seeking for $250,000 for the Center for Rural Policy to conduct a study to develop a policy proposal to determine the best way the state can attract agribusiness opportunities in rural Minnesota by matching investments of the private businesses with necessarily public infrastructure. The study will explore best practices from both Minnesota and other states related to agribusiness development, identify the tools we already have that can be enhanced, as well as the roadblocks that should be removed and building blocks that should be added that will allow our state to further grow. These policy recommendations then will provide to the legislator for implementation. Thank you for your consideration, and I look forward to taking any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ziegler. Any questions for the testifier? Any questions? So, thank you. Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good project, good organization. I do have to ask one question. On line 1.8, you talked about this pilot project for South Central Minnesota. Could that be expanded more? Is this just focusing on that particular area of the state?
Mr. Ziegler.
Thank you for the question. So this is just to look at what we call southern Minnesota or south central southwestern Minnesota. There was a study funded last year for CETA, which is southeast Minnesota, looking at some economic development. And while it's not the same, we didn't want to overlap some of those areas. And we also see that this is kind of referred to almost as a pilot, that if we find a model that works in this, it'll also work for other parts of rural Minnesota related to agribusiness. So it's a starting point.
Jerry Anderson? Thank you. Representative Johnson, you also have an amendment. Is that accurate?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to move the amendment, the A1.
Okay.
And this bill was originally, the first draft of this bill was drafted in the Senate, and they did not reflect the language that's the reality of the House. And so the amendment is to remove on line 1.11 the words economic development, workforce, and. So the report would go to the committees with jurisdiction over agriculture. The funding goes to the Department of Agriculture. That's the appropriate place for the report to go.
All right, thank you. Representative Johnson moves the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Representative Johnson, any other questions for the testifier or Representative Johnson on the bill? Amendment. Hearing none, is there anybody else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Seeing no one, any final comments, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my final comment is keep an eye on Greenstein. This is coming out of a lot of energy in our part of the state, and this really does reflect the reality of a relatively strong economy right in the Mankato area. And I think it extends the concept is extend that strength of our economy, which has people across the many sectors. We're really coming to a better understanding of how important agriculture is, whether it be in actually production of the crop, but also the handling of that crop, the value added, the soybean processing, et cetera, and then all the many services that go with that. And once you start seeing that, you see the dynamics of that as Mr. Ziegler represented. I do believe that this is an excellent way for southern Minnesota to seek better economic development going over the next several years. This bill will help us do that.
Thank you so much. House File 3484, as amended, is held over. Thank you, Representative Johnson, Mr. Ziegler, for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. Any announcements?
Good job.
All right. We're going to be back on the regular schedule next.